This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the High Yield Cash Account on public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A High Yield Cash Account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Interest rates and retail, retail and interest rates on the program today from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday today, the 11th of December. Good as always to have you along. One hates to be anticlimactic right out the gate, but the A-list economic news of this week may not turn out to be all that. Monetary policy is what I'm talking about. Interest rates, of course. The Federal Reserve meets tomorrow and Wednesday, and then will come Super Thursday, when the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, and central banks in Switzerland and Norway will have meetings as well. And as Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports, best pay attention to what they all say rather than what they do.
Economists are expecting the Fed, the ECB, and the Bank of England to keep rates steady this week, while the bankers who pull the globe's levers of monetary policy try to assess whether they've done enough to slow their economies. Jonathan Wellburn is a senior researcher at the Rand Corporation.
The real challenge here is that the central banks are trying to, on one side, manage the effects of high interest rates, and on the other side, trying to manage the ongoing war with inflation.
How long to keep rates high at the risk of triggering a recession and rising unemployment while trying to reach that 2% inflation target that global central banks favor?
So in terms of those two indicators for the U.S., the employment picture and the inflation picture looks more promising than it has for some time.
Eileen Grable is a professor of international finance at the University of Denver. Unemployment is under 4% and inflation is down to 3.2%.
And I think that that's also the case to a great extent in the Eurozone and also in the Bank of England.
Eurozone inflation is down to under 3%, and the Bank of England, having a bit of a harder time of it, is at 4.6%. Here's the Rand Corporation's Jonathan Wellburn again.
I think that the question for central banks, including the U.S. Federal Reserve, is when to declare victory and whether or not they risk declaring victory too early in the fight against inflation.
So the world's top central bankers are likely to spend this week asking all of us to just chill a bit before getting too excited about rate cuts. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
On the way to all those central bank meetings, there will be a data point or two of note. The Consumer Price Index comes out tomorrow, inflation at the retail level, of course. And then on Thursday, we'll get November retail sales. So, offering you tomorrow's news today, we will have updates from retail regulars through this program this afternoon. First up, Vanita Cooper. She runs Silhouette Sneakers and Art in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
We're still down from last year, but whereas last year sales were slower from October to November, like this year, November sales are up from October, which is good, I think. You know, we did a loyalty program that we started in Q3, basically a points program. We'll see how that does, like, in the heart of our holiday season, which tends to be December. We get a lot of last-minute shoppers, which makes sense because, you know, you've got to go inside a store to do last-minute shopping. I will be at Silhouette a lot over the next few weeks. I actually had this thought the other day where I just kind of miss the frequent presence that I used to have at the store. Like, I just love being in the store. I love managing inventory. I love, you know, as lame as that sounds, you know, I love talking to people. Even if it was a stressful year, it just feels like now's the time where people are like, okay, like, I can let my guard down a little bit and just enjoy the moment, you know? I deserve this nice thing.
Vanita Cooper at Silhouette Sneakers and Art in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Wall Street today, green was the color of choice. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, here's a list. Miracle on 34th Street, the Thanksgiving Day Parade, the flagship store in Herald Square with the wooden escalators, if they're even still there. You don't get much more iconic in American retail than Macy's. And if a group of investors has its way, they will get that whole kit and caboodle for a relatively mere $5.8 billion. That's the reporting from the Wall Street Journal. And it might not sound like all that much, relatively speaking, not even $6 billion, but then again, Macy's and department stores in general, they're not all that anymore either. Marketplace's Elizabeth Trovall takes it from there.
For two decades, the so-called magic of Macy's has been losing its luster. And today, Mark Cohen with Columbia Business School sums it up this way.
There's no there there.
Meaning?
What made them famous was they had the things people wanted to buy in a setting people wanted to shop in. All of that has disappeared at Macy's.
From deteriorating stores and customer service to a lack of investment in their own private labels. He says the company's rounds of cost-cutting measures make it even harder for the store to set itself apart today.
Macy's has been sawing their own legs off slowly and quietly for years in that regard. And now they don't have much of a leg to stand on.
Cohen blames poor leadership. Though Macy's is hardly the only department store that has struggled to stay relevant. For one, people are shopping less at indoor malls, says Sucharita Kodali with Forrester.
The shift in real estate has been to what we call mixed-use facilities or a lot of the outdoor strip centers.
And shoppers have tons of choices these days.
They're buying more clothes at Costco and Walmart to Amazon and, you know, kind of apparel stores like H&M, Zara, Shein, Temu, the list goes on.
Another challenge is Macy's doesn't carry the modern tailored products people want to buy, says Jessica Ramirez with Jane Hawley and Associates.
Macy's, it's really been out of date and out of touch with the consumer, and it hasn't evolved as far as how retail is looked at today.
Ramirez says many in-demand products are bypassing department stores altogether and going straight to consumers. I'm Elizabeth Trovall for Marketplace.
Last year, the United States Postal Service delivered 7.2 billion packages. That's about a billion more than they did in 2019. And you can imagine that some not small percentage of those parcels were Amazon packages, and getting them from point A to point B is not always easy, especially in rural towns. Up in Bemidji, Minnesota, it's about 100 miles south of the Canadian border, a sudden onslaught of Amazon packages has been causing all sorts of trouble at the local post office. Caroline O'Donovan wrote about it at the Washington Post. Good to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us what has been happening in beautiful downtown Bemidji, Minnesota, since Amazon came to town, would you?
Yeah, so the local post office in Bemidji, Minnesota was totally overwhelmed with Amazon packages. From one day to the next, they started getting thousands of Amazon packages around 5 o'clock in the morning. And that is causing difficulties not only for the postal workers who are working super long hours, but also for the residents of Bemidji. This was all they could talk about in town when I was there, because the mail is getting delayed, they said, because of so many Amazon packages piling up. So people, and especially businesses in the downtown district, were concerned that they wouldn't be getting the, you know, checks, bills, invoices, credit card statements that they need. Mm-hmm.
Just to be clear here, this is not just a Bemidji thing, right? It's large swaths of rural areas of this country.
I've heard reports about similar issues in Portland, Maine, in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, most recently in the San Juan Islands in Washington. Mm-hmm. Those rural deliveries are really expensive, no matter who you are. They're really, you know, long drives. It's the last thing anyone wants to pay for. And that's sort of why it falls to the Postal Service and why it therefore becomes such a big problem for the mail right. in those areas.
So let's talk business model here for a second. And we should say, as we get into this, that the U.S. Postal Service occasionally, maybe even right now, I don't know, buys advertising on this program. So just, you know, so everybody knows where we stand. We cover them like any other companies you might have heard elsewhere on public radio. They need, and the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, has said, we need Amazon's business to, in essence, stay afloat because they lose many billions of dollars a year.
Yeah. So a lot of people assume that the U.S. Postal Service is funded by taxpayer dollars, but it's not. Like you just said, it operates as an independent agency, like a business. And so they need to have revenue. They lost $6.5 billion last year. It's no secret, I think, that the paper mail isn't exactly, increasing in volume. And so the plan there is to sort of have the Postal Service turn a little bit more into a logistics company where they pick up right. more parcel volume, which they get paid more for, obviously. That's his plan to kind of save the post office, if you will.
How come Amazon packages in Bemidji get priority over the bills and checks and other mail items that the residents of Bemidji are looking for?
So a crucial thing that the post office would say is it's not that Amazon packages get priority, although that is functionally how the postal workers there feel, like in practice, based on what's happening. But it's not necessarily that there's a directive right. to prioritize Amazon over, say, Target. Okay. You did your disclaimer, you know, Jeff Bezos, right. Founder of Amazon, owns the Washington Post. I'll do mine too, so I don't feel left out.
Fair enough. The more people know, the merrier. So where does this end? Because it's not like we're going to be ordering less stuff online, whether it's Amazon or you know, what have you.
The Postal Service, you know, told me that their goal is to have the packages and the mail be totally coordinated and seamless and go together and to resolve the issue. In terms of the post office, changing its contract with Amazon, that's not a deal that the public is allowed to know what's in it. They consider it a proprietary, you know, business secrets. And we don't know what's in it. We can't say. In terms of what's going to happen there, I think, you know, we have to see.
One last thing about Bemidji. Are people just steamed?
This is one of the only stories I've reported where before I even asked anyone a question, people all around me were discussing this issue. You know, so yes, people are definitely upset. There's people who have medical documents, you know, stuff for their insurance. There's folks who don't like to do their billing online. But what I didn't necessarily realize is that there are these businesses that are not necessarily like super old-fashioned businesses by any means, but they save a lot of money doing their billing and their banking and their invoicing in the mail. They don't do electronic payments because they're small businesses and that ends up being a big cut of what their revenue would be. Mm. And that is something that surprised me.
The mail does matter. Caroline O'Donovan at the Washington Post. Caroline, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time. Nice article.
Thank you so much.
Sorry, what's that? More retail? Here you go. Eric Vaughn runs the custom frame shop Eric's I've Been Framed in Detroit, Michigan.
Well, business is steady. During the holiday season, we usually we get an increase of picture frames or people wanting to get things framed for gifts for the holidays. So I have to make sure I allow enough time for people to bring it in. But I always get some last-minute stragglers coming in. Same thing has been since the pandemic is finding good help. And it's been a challenge. But I've been able to kind of get through it because I'm spending a lot more hours here at the shop. I'm trying not to, but, you know, pretty much I work 7 days. I'm preparing for the last minute rush. It always comes at the same time of the year. And I just have to be patient and just take my time and, you know, look closely at everything to make sure we get it done and get it done properly.
Eric Vaughn, he's the proprietor at Eric's I've Been Framed in Detroit, Michigan. Coming up.
It rained earlier that day, but for the most part, hey, I had people come through.
Rain or shine, huh? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 157 points today, about 0.4%, 36,404 for the blue chips. The NASDAQ lifted 28 points, 0.2%, 14,432. The S&P 500 increased 18 points, 0.4% there, 46,022. Heard earlier from Elizabeth Trovall about Macy's buyout offer, which values the retailer at $21 per share. Macy's surged 19.4% today. A little competition there, you say? All right, fine, we can do that. Amazon down 1%. Kohl's, which actually accepts returns of some Amazon products, because that is a Byzantine world, the whole returns thing, rose 7%. Online furniture and home goods retailer Wayfair slipped 0.4%. Dillard's ascended 4.3% today. Bonds fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note up just a touch, 4.24%. You're listening to Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. The UN Climate Summit in Dubai wraps up tomorrow, ending what will have been 13 days of meetings and panel discussions, speeches, and the like about our warming planet. One of the key agenda items, other than, you know, fossil fuels, has been food, how to make the global food supply more resilient in the face of climate change, and how to cut greenhouse gas emissions that are tied to agriculture. Billions of dollars have been pledged toward those goals, money that is badly needed and long overdue, as Marketplace's Savannah Maher reports.
About a third of global greenhouse gas emissions are tied to food and agriculture, according to the United Nations. But this is the first time that those sectors have been a headline item at UN World Climate Talks, says Patty Fong with the Global Alliance for the Future of Food. In the past, she says,
most of the tension in climate has been towards decarbonizing energy.
That's partly because there's a clearer path toward an energy transition. When world leaders or philanthropists want to support that, there are lots of ready-made and proven solutions for them to invest in, says Daniela Kiriak with the Climate Policy Initiative.
There's no solar panel in agri-food systems.
By that, she means climate innovations aren't always scalable or transferable from one agricultural economy to another.
When we talk about what are the technical, practical solutions for climate in agri-food systems, they are very specific to the local context.
That's part of why less than 5% of global climate finance is earmarked for food and agriculture, according to a Climate Policy Initiative analysis. But world leaders at COP28 have pledged to put more than $3 billion toward a more sustainable food supply. So why now?
Well, it's increasingly hard to ignore.
Chris Barrett is a professor of economics at Cornell. He says one thing drawing world leaders' attention is the rising cost of food, which is driven in part by climate change. I'm Savannah Maher for Marketplace.
There are more and more EVs on the roads now, and in urban areas, driving an electric vehicle is almost like driving a car with an internal combustion engine. EV chargers are slowly being installed at more gas stations, groceries, department stores, and parking garages. But out in rural parts of the country, EVs get complicated. Take Wyoming, number 9 on the list of biggest states by area. But it's only got 95 charging stations all in. Colorado, the next state south, has more than 2,000 chargers, which means it's basically impossible to travel the distances that people travel in Wyoming in an EV. That is a business opportunity, as Caitlin Tan reports from Wyoming Public Radio, but not everybody, especially the state government, is on board.
Big one-ton diesel trucks are something you see a lot of in Wyoming, a state known for large swaths of untouched, rugged land.
You got 100 miles between everything. There's very little civilization.
David Halter is a fourth-generation Wyomingite that grew up with the culture of big trucks. But 4 years ago, he and his wife went electric.
No particular reason other than electricity is cheaper.
They recently went on a Wyoming road trip, but it was tricky. They had to divert into Montana to charge their Tesla, skipping their favorite Wyoming towns.
I like to go to those places, but I can't now because there's very little charging in those locations.
Tourism is a $4.5 billion industry in Wyoming. People come from all over to see Yellowstone National Park and Devil's Tower. And EV drivers who come to visit need chargers, which Wyoming doesn't have a lot of, at least not yet.
I just wanted to welcome you guys.
Mike Yin is president of Otter Space, which is opening a new EV charger in Pinedale, Wyoming.
I like to say that it's infrastructure week when we open one of these chargers.
Pinedale is a very western town with businesses like the Cowboy Shop and Corral Bar right on Main Street. And now, just down the block, you can hear the steady hum of an EV charging. Some locals came to see the new charger in action. Yin demonstrates on his Tesla.
Now you make sure your car is plugged in, take it out of the port, put it in the adapter.
Before this, there was just one charger in town, for Teslas only, and a full charge takes about 8 hours. And much to the frustration to drivers who came to plug in, that charger is often blocked by diesel trucks. But this new one can charge all kinds of EVs in about 30 minutes. Pinedale's Mayor Matt Murdock hopes this will bring in tourism dollars. The next closest chargers are 77 miles one direction and 135 miles another.
It opens up Pinedale to a wide variety of tourists who would normally, you know, not come up this direction because otherwise their batteries die and they can't make the distance.
This is just one of four locations that Yin opened in Wyoming this year at about $150,000 a pop, all on his company's dime.
One of the reasons I built something without any government funds at all was to say, yes, that it is possible for stations in Wyoming to work.
If it sounds like Yin is trying to sell the state on EV chargers, that's because he is. He's also a representative in the state legislature. Last spring, Wyoming put a pause on accepting federal funds to build out EV chargers. The 2021 infrastructure bill provided Wyoming with $26 million to dole out over 5 years, namely to private businesses. But Jordan Young with the state's Department of Transportation has concerns. Like, what if a business closes down within those 5 years?
The state is not intending to own or operate these stations.
Wyoming is also negotiating with the feds about the distance requirement between chargers. Right now, the funding requires every 50 miles.
We don't even have towns every 50 miles. We don't necessarily even have gas station every 50 miles. It's a lot of pronghorn and sagebrush.
If the state and federal government can find an agreement, that funding may come available for new chargers. But until then, much of that sagebrush landscape is accessible to diesel trucks and pronghorn, but not electric vehicles. In Pinedale, Wyoming, I'm Caitlin Tan for Marketplace.
Rounding out our retailers today, Philip Rollins runs the record and comic book store Offbeat in downtown Jackson, Mississippi.
We had a pretty good Black Friday. It was pretty successful. We had a lot of the record store day or the RSD Black Friday releases. And I implemented a system, like a menu system, so people who were in line, I had like just check them off. And that way they can look around the store. And I was like already filling out their orders. And I let them know, hey, this is out, this is gone. I forgot to add the Olivia Rodrigo on there, but we got 5 copies left. So it went well. And then we had an event here downtown called Capital City Lights. There was vendors outside. It rained earlier that day, but for the most part, I had people come through. As of right now, I mean, this is what I kind of expected for the holidays. People are coming in, they're buying record players, they're buying speakers for the record players. People are talking about, you know, hey, I'm going to get this with this check, and then I'm going to come back and get this item with when I get my next check before Christmas. So, and people are placing special orders for Christmas already, which is good. So just hoping, you know, just kind of keep that momentum going and just be thankful for, you know, what I got going on here.
Philip Rollins running Offbeat down in Jackson, Mississippi. More to come from all of them after the holidays just to see how things went. This final note on the way out today, of which, to be honest, I am not sure what to make. And yes, absolutely generational differences, but there's new data out from the Pew on social media use by teenagers. 1 in 5 teenagers in this country, the data says, say they are on YouTube or TikTok almost constantly. That's the quote. That just seems like a lot. Our daily production team includes Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Sophia Terenzio. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, Well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.